I'd like to introduce Dr. Sanchez, who will be speaking to structured communication for effective information transfer.
Good morning, everyone. I neglected to say at the beginning that we're going to leave the questions towards the end. So at the end of the presentation, we'll have some time to ask questions. I have no relevant financial relationships, unfortunately. So my objectives for this talk are to have you understand that safe and effective handoffs are a professional duty, that hopefully you'll understand some of the causes of communication failure during handoffs, and some tools and ideas around strategies to optimize the transfer of information, and the fact that structured communication tools and other practices are well known to reduce the level of miscommunication and communication failures during transitions of care. So let's start off with what is a handoff. It's a transfer of professional responsibility, and this is a key component of this. It's not just information transfer. It's a transfer of professional responsibility and accountability for some or all aspects of care for a patient or a group of patients to another person or a team on a temporary or permanent basis. So a handoff has components of a transfer of information, but more importantly, it's also a transfer of authority and of responsibility. And again, this is a professional obligation to ensure that transitions of care occur in a safe, reliable, and efficient and effective way. There are a number of transitions of care that occur during the patient's stay in a hospital, particularly in the perioperative period. There are lots of handoffs in the perioperative period, and in teaching hospitals because of the duty hours and a number of other things. There are even more transitions of care and handoffs. So we need to understand this process and implement effective strategies to reduce the incidence of error or miscommunication. There are a number of basic fundamental models of communication. This is the Shannon Weaver model, which was developed in the 1950s, which has these elements, assuming that so there's a sender, there are the ideas, the encoding of information, the channel by which the information is transmitted, the receiver, the decoding, and then the feedback. Assuming the ideas are accurate, there are all sorts of all the other elements can fail in this process. So this is a good framework to understand how things can go wrong during handoffs. The ultimate goal of a handoff is to achieve shared mental models between the sender and receiver. So there are failures of encoding and decoding information. You can have missing critical elements, ambiguous terminology, as Dr. Lobdell mentioned. There are all sorts of cognitive biases and assumptions that are made that are unspoken that can create communication failure. There are also different communication styles. Not only different professions have different backgrounds and training, but different individuals and different coming from different cultures and language barriers that can contribute to communication failure. The environment that we work in and we do these handoffs is usually a high-paced environment with a lot of noise, with quote-unquote noise, or things that affect the channel, the transmission of information, frequent interruptions, all sorts of other, production pressures, all sorts of things that impact the ability to effectively transmit information. And then we often don't have a standard way of transmitting the information reliably, which really creates a lot of risk for miscommunication. It is known that senders systematically overestimate how well their message is understood by receivers. This has been proven time and again. And the sender usually assumes that the listener shares the same body of knowledge, the same context, especially when familiarity is high, so that if you know someone very well, you're making assumptions about the fact that they are sharing your mental model when in fact they may not be. So the Joint Commission has identified the medical errors being involved from miscommunication during handoffs. 80% of errors have some level of miscommunication during handoffs. 4 out of 5 serious sentinel events, according to the Joint Commission, meaning death or serious injuries due to miscommunication between caregivers during handoffs. And 37% of handoffs between caregivers were defective and didn't allow the receiver to safely care for the patient, which is the ultimate goal. This is an interesting study, the odds ratio of an adverse event by when a cross-covering physician was involved was sixfold. So it is an issue. This is the Joint Commission demonstrating how communication is a major root cause of many of these sentinel events. And in 2006, the Joint Commission developed the first time that they put the National Patient Safety Goal as requiring hospitals to implement standardized approaches to patient handoffs. So why does this happen? Well, as we mentioned, there are a number of different elements that contribute to this. There's a kind of the training and practices by different professionals. As Kevin mentioned, nurses tend to be more narrative and descriptive, where physicians are more focused on problem solving. There are different styles of communication, different past experiences that create different mental models about situations. There are a number of power gradients, hierarchies, and different levels of empowerment between different individuals. The way you communicate, your tone of voice, and the level of respect that's being used during a handoff is important and can impact the accuracy of the communication, as well as gender and cultural differences. In addition to that, there are a number of potentiators, including the production pressure, time pressure, high noise levels, particularly in an ICU when you're trying to do a handoff, patients that are very, very sick and have complex medical issues further exacerbate the potential for a miscommunication. Issue with multitasking, a number of other factors, time-sensitive conditions, rapid turnovers, particularly in the perioperative period when we're turning over quite frequently, and the handoffs occur quite often, set up a situation where you can have miscommunication. Interruptions, a huge factor in poor handoffs, patients that are unknown, new patients, in a wide clinical variation in practices and processes of care. So for effective handoffs, what our goal is, our goals are, is to have a complete transfer of information so that we can communicate all relevant information, and that information should be clear and plainly understood. It should be brief. The longer these handoffs occur, as Kevin mentioned, the more of a chance of miscommunication. And so it needs to be transmitted in a concise manner, and then timely, so that it occurs real time and the receiver is given an opportunity to ask questions to verify, validate, or clarify anything that they don't understand. The best antidote to communication failure during handoffs is having structured communication practices, using a standard language, a standard set of terminology. We often use sort of colloquialisms in medicine, and when you have new people involved, they may not be familiar with that. So Kevin brought up the issue of the cardiopulmonary bypass pump. pump on and off. My friend at the MGH, Tor Sun, talks about an incident where the cardiac surgeon, an experienced cardiac surgeon, talked about frosting the pumpkin, and the perfusionist didn't know what that was. That was his code for giving cardioplegia, and that event didn't occur timely enough and created an adverse event. So the use of non-standard phraseology is a problem. Being concise, having a predictable sequence in which the information is transmitted, having memory aids, and there are a number of them, Kevin mentioned some, that will help you make sure that there are no gaps and no missing elements, critical elements. And then finally, having closed-loop communication so that there is the certainty that the communication, the idea that was transmitted, is actually received and understood as intended. And Kevin talked about SBAR, and we won't go into it, but SBAR actually comes from the Navy and the nuclear submarine industry, where they use this very effectively. It's a very simple way to communicate in a very structured way, where you communicate the problem, you give concise background, you tell the receiver what you think, and you make a recommendation as to what you want done. A number of other industries use it, including healthcare, obviously, and nursing has adopted this practice very effectively. It would be important for us to use structured communication not only during handoffs, but all the time, so that communication failures are eliminated. So we won't go into this. Dr. Lobdell's already done this, but this is one easy one. The IPASS he talked about as well. The interesting thing about IPASS is a couple of things. One is the idea of illness severity. And this is one of the things that causes the most communication failure is not transmitting how worried you are about a patient. Someone comes in fresh from a good night's rest or whatever. You've been worried about a patient all night long, but when you transmit the information, that worry doesn't get transmitted necessarily because you get bogged down in information. But this one right off the bat tells you, is this patient sick or not? Do I need to worry about this patient or not? So there's a stable patient and there's the unstable patient, and then there's those that, you have a gut feeling that something's just not right. And that's an important piece of information that needs to be communicated during a handoff. So the IPASS has that element. The other thing that IPASS does, it introduces the idea of situational awareness, knowing what's going on all around you on the patient and the team. There may be other things that are not patient-related that are going on that you need to communicate because it will affect patient care and the way you think about a particular patient. And contingency planning, and that is the preparing the receiving team, the receiving individual, for an eventuality that you've been thinking about all day long, all night long. If this happens, then that, but the receiver may not really be thinking along those lines. So that is part of the structured communication practice that you're transmitting. If this happens, then you should think about that. Often not done in handoffs, but very, very helpful to prepare the receiving team, the receiving individual, to better take care of that patient. And then this other one is a simple one, shout. And again, it starts off with this, is this patient sick or not sick? Because you want to make sure that you red flag those patients that people need to be thinking about all the time when there might be a subtle change in status that the receiving team or the receiving individual should really think about promptly that maybe something's wrong because they've already been pre-sensitized to the fact that this patient may go sour, often not done in the standard handoffs. And then this idea about closed-loop communication. When you go to McDonald's, they always read back to you what you've ordered just to make sure they don't give you the wrong thing. So this is a practice that we need to be doing as well in healthcare. We don't do it as often. But it helps close the loop. It's closed-loop communication, reading back, making sure that the receiver has understood what you intended to transmit. There are a number of other tools, you know, there's sign-out forms, all sorts of ways to organize information so that there are no missing critical elements, and then to-do lists. These are very helpful adjuncts, but these themselves are not handoffs. The handoff occurs between one individual and another individual, or a team and another team. Digital aids as well can be helpful, but they cannot substitute for a successful communication act. And it's been demonstrated that digital aids are helpful, computer-based sign-outs. They're very helpful, but sometimes they get in the way, particularly when it's not face-to-face communication. If you're transmitting information through a computer and you think that's an adequate handoff, then you're setting up a situation that results in communication failure. So I'd like to just go over some of the best practices based on my review of the literature on handoffs. Face-to-face is an essential piece of handoffs. It's, you know, sometimes done by telephone, sometimes done by computer. That, again, sets up a situation where you can create communication failures. It needs to be done in a safe, quiet environment with limited or no interruptions. The idea of introducing contingency plans is an important piece of a safe and effective handoff. So if this happens, or watch out for this because this may happen, that is enormously helpful to the receiving team to know, to have that idea right off the bat. The idea of the patient being sick or not sick is a very helpful and one of the best practices to use when transmitting information during a handoff. The use of checklists to make sure that you avoid missing things, missing critical elements. And the unambiguous transfer of responsibility. It should be made very clear during a handoff that you're transferring responsibility to the other person. Sometimes it's not clear. Sometimes the unit, the nursing staff, the hospital doesn't know who's going to be assuming care for this patient. Are you still on call? When do you get off call? When are you off? You know, that kind of precise information about who is assuming care at what point of time and how to contact that individual is also a responsibility for a successful handoff. The best practice overall is really, as Kevin mentioned, with multidisciplinary rounds, rounding together. That is the best form of handoffs, face-to-face with the two teams and the patient, in preferably an interdisciplinary fashion where the nursing staff and everybody else is there so that there are eyes on the patient. Everybody knows who everybody else is. The patient knows who the receiving team is, who is their doctor, their medical team at night or whenever it is. That allows for robust team communication, an opportunity for feedback and providing input, enhancing the transfer of information and the transfer of professional responsibility for that patient. Again, being interdisciplinary is important. And ultimately, what we want to do is get to shared mental model, so everybody that's taking care of that patient knows what the common thinking about that patient's progress is and what needs to be done. There are a number of resources if you're interested. The safersignout.com is an excellent toolkit that has a number of forms and posters and educational materials, videos. The AMA has good resources on patient handoffs that you can look up. So just in conclusion, effective handoffs is the effective transfer of information and responsibility for a patient or a group of patients. It should use structured format and clear language. It should demonstrate that the information is received and understood in order to have shared mental models about the patient. Closed loop communication is an important component of making sure that there are shared mental models, with the opportunity for a receiver to ask clarifying questions. And ultimately, you want to make sure that the accepting team is prepared to anticipate changes in the patient's status. And I'll leave you with this final quote from George Bernard Shaw: "The single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place." Thank you.